This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from my home studio, and happy to have you with me over the course of the next hour. As always, you are listening to this show live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM Channel 201, or you're tuned in to our free live streaming or the archived podcast of the program. And, of course, you're doing that on our HRRN website, horseracingradio.net. Well, today's guest has saddled 29 winners to date, and that number is rising quickly. Five of those winners coming so far here in 2020, including his current stable star, County Final, who just recently finished second behind the ultra-talented Casadero in the Grade 3 Bashford Manor at Churchill Downs. He is trainer John Ennis. Please join me in welcoming him to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here today. John, welcome, my friend.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Doing great. Looking forward to hearing your story, and congrats on that huge runner-up effort by County Final.
Thanks very much. Yeah, he seems like he's a real nice horse, and he's definitely going in the right direction.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. He is, when you finish second to a monster like Casadero, I know you wanted to be first, but he ran a great race.
Yeah, he did. He sure did. It was his first try on dirt. His first start was on the grass. It was professional in the way he done it. And we decided to go to the Bashford Manor. And as I said, it was his first run on dirt. And you have to be super proud of him. He set the fractions. He went really quick in front, and it took a really nice horse to pass him. So we're really excited about this horse.
Well, being by Oxbow out of a Tappet mare, he has the right to be good on any surface, but certainly on the dirt as well. And I think that was vindicated, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was for sure. He trained really good on the dirt beforehand, and I was actually concerned about running on the grass because we never really had him on it, and I didn't really want to run on the grass, but the race was there, and it kind of set up good for the Bashford Manor to have a shot in there because he was breathing really good, and we decided to run him on the grass, and I wasn't really expecting to win, but when he did, it was great, and as I said, I wasn't really worried about the dirt, so it's he's dual purpose on both codes, the grass and dirt, so he's exciting for the year that's coming forward.
Well, we are going to spend plenty of time talking about your life and your career. We'll go back to the beginning, you growing up in Ireland and being introduced to horse racing. We will talk about all of that over the course of the next 50 minutes or so. But let's start with the story of County Final, since we're talking about him. When did you first lay eyes on him, John?
Well, I typically, I go to the sale in September, all the Ireland sales here in Lexington, and with my budget, Mike, I can't really afford the better pedigrees and whatnot. So I usually get through as many yearlings as I can in September and October. And I was basically in the back ring, my usual spot in the back of the back ring. And this handsome grey colt kept walking past me. And physically, he was a book four horse. Physically, he was a standout that day for me. I said, wow, he's... But, Oxbow is not that commercial. And I said, no, do I really want to buy an Oxbow? But every time he came around to me, I just loved him. I loved him. And I said, okay. I went up and said, I think I was the only person on him, but I bought him for $9,500. And I kind of said to myself, did I pay too much for an Oxbow? But physically, if he was by any other sire that was commercial, he'd say, wow, it was a steal. And I know I was delighted with him. Minute bottom start breaking, and I just love the horse.
Yeah, and it's easy to see why, because when you post pictures on your social media account, oftentimes you'll post a picture of, at least recently anyway, of County Final, and he is such a strapping horse. I mean, he's just absolutely stunning when you see him in the flesh, and I can imagine, you know, that when you first saw him, as you said, he kind of took you back a little bit, and you said, I have to have him.
Yeah.
What things, John, in particular, when you're looking at a young horse like that, what things are you looking for that jump out to you that make you say, yeah, I got to write a check for that horse?
Well, I'm trying to buy a yearling that's going to be precocious as a two-year-old. That's not too small, but has a good look in its eye where it's very precocious in the sales ring. It has a great walk, and it's walking, it's going places, it's going forward, and it basically looks like a two-year-old that you can go early with and has a bit of leg like he has that's not going to be one-dimensional and just be a two-year-old. So he ticked all the boxes there. He was very correct. He'd got a great eye on him. He was just like a two-year-old that you say, okay, Keeneland, April, this horse is ready to rock and roll. And he just ticked all the boxes, Mike, and they're the ones that, you know, they have to have a nice kind of short back as well, and a nice hip and hind leg, and he had all that, and mentally, I just loved precocity about him as well. So, you know, it's very hard to buy them, especially if they have a commercial sire and a nice dam as well on that side. It's very hard to buy them when they look like that, but obviously I got lucky, you know, first of all out of a Tappet Mare by Oxbow, and no one wanted them except me.
Yeah, lucky for you, and lucky for the bank account too when that happens. That's always good. What's it like,
helps,
John?
It,
yeah, what's it like when you, that moment, since you own him, you're training him, and that moment when you realize that you were right in making that purchase and that you have a horse on your hands that can really run, what's that moment like when you discover that?
Well, that's fantastic, but you never really know, Mike. They can all look the part, and, you know, you never really know until you start kind of training them and breathing them a little bit. But early on in January and February, I was kind of super excited about this horse because he was so precocious on the track, and everything he'd done was easy with the other two-year-olds. The other two-year-olds that had the barn, he'd done everything easy, and actually told a good friend of mine, Jerry O'Dwyer, about him early January, February. I said, I've got an Oxbow colt I really like. I said, everything's easy for me. He's a Kentucky horse, I said. He's a Kentucky horse, and look, a lot of luck goes into it too, Mike, and I was just maybe at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, you certainly were. Talking with trainer John Ennis here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. If you are just joining us, his County Final, finishing second in the Grade 3 Bashford Manor recently at Churchill Downs. What's next for him, John? Where will we see him?
He's actually entered in the sale, hopefully, Monday at Fasic Tipton. So, providing if the market's strong and somebody wants to buy him, he's there for sale. We'll see. We've no problem bringing him home, but we're going to test the market and see what happens. And if somebody wants to buy him, they're going to buy a legitimate horse that's got clean X-rays and a good scope. And he's there to be bought, obviously. But if we end up taking him home, we will that too. We'll do that too because, you know, he's a Saratoga horse, and there's two spots in Saratoga for him. The Saratoga Special, which is going 6 furlongs on the dirt. That's a Grade 2, I think. And then that's over 6 furlongs. And then there's the Skidmore, which is 5.5 in the grass as well later in the meet. So there's two spots at Saratoga, which that's where I'd be going with him. And he's earned the spots in them places. So, as I said, he's there at Fasic Tipton Monday. If he's sold, best of luck to New Connections, but me and the partners are quite happy to bring him home too and bring him to Saratoga.
Is it difficult to make the decision to enter him in a sale when you know he has this much talent?
It is very difficult. But at the end of the day, it's a business. I love buying the yearlings in September and October, so for me to be able to do it financially, it's what I got to do. I got to hopefully get lucky every year or two and buy a nice yearling and like County Final or similar. And, you know, if somebody wants to buy it, I have to move them on, and I'll go and be shopping in September again and October.
You know, it was interesting. I was flipping through your Twitter feed as I was getting ready for the show, and somebody commented on the name County Final, and they thought it was an appropriate name because nobody realizes how difficult it really is to win a county final. So what, for people that don't know, what exactly is a county final?
Well, so in our country of Ireland, we have hurling and Gaelic hurling matches and football matches, Gaelic football matches, all year round, typically. And whatever county you're in, you're County Meath, I live in, and we'll have hurling matches, and so all the clubs have to play to get to the county final, and all the clubs around the country, they played again the county final, and it's great rivalry, and everybody looks forward to a county final. And so yeah, that's my father's actually a referee still. He's still referees two games at State Hall and county final. So we are, everybody in Ireland who will know a county final is what it means for a club, for a small club at home in Ireland. So yeah, that's why I named them county final, because I'm a big club man in hurling and football, and so I thought it was a good name for a nice horse.
Did you play growing up?
I did. I played hurling, I played Gaelic football a lot, and obviously I didn't grow much. I was a smaller type of a man, teenager, so I kind of got bustled out of the way, and I kind of stopped when I was maybe 15 or 16 playing, but I still watch all the GAA back home, which is what is called the Gaelic Athletic Association back at home. So I watch it all, and I'm still a big spectator and fan of the Gaelic and hurling at home.
Describe, for people that have never heard of Gaelic football, describe how it compares to, say, the National Football League that we see here, or even soccer. It's somewhat of a combination, and then you kind of throw rugby into the mix too, don't you?
So Gaelic football is something similar to rugby in a sense, if you know what rugby is, but we've got a ball. There's 15 players on a team. It's two halves of 35 minutes a half, and it's a very physical game. You actually solo the ball, you bounce the ball, and you have to hand pass it to other players. But it's a physical game, and it's non-stop. There's no stoppages, really, in the game, but it's very entertaining. You can score a goal by kicking the ball into the back of the net. Obviously, we have a goalkeeper like soccer, but you can score a goal by kicking it in, and you get 3 points for doing that. Then for kicking it over the bar, which is over the goals, you get 1 point. But it's a very entertaining game. It's watched by everybody in Ireland, and we all have in our counties and our clubs. We all have a county final, which everybody kind of plays for their club, and it's a big thing, kind of like UK basketball here and stuff like that. Everybody watches it, and everybody wants to see UK play good, and it's your local team or whatever schools your kids go to, something like that. So in a lot of villages at home, we have a club team, and mine is Longwood, and all the guys go to try and play in a county final, hence where I got the name County Final. And another little thing as well, my dad is a referee back home, so he does referee county final, and so it's what I've kind of grown up with as well, playing football and hurling as a young lad.
Yeah, and I'll admit, John, that the only reason I knew that it was kind of a combination of rugby and soccer and maybe a little bit of actual football as we know it here in the States is because I went and Googled Gaelic football when you mentioned it. And there are pictures and videos out there. It looks like a serious, tough man's kind of game. Did you ever have to lay somebody out?
Oh, no, it is. Like, obviously, there's no real fighting in it now or anything, but it is physical. It's physical. You hit each other hard, and there's no shoulder pads, there's no padding worn. You have to be extremely fit, and you have to be able to take the bangs and the blows that you get. But it's a very entertaining game, and it's great to be played, and it's even better to watch.
Steve Asmussen better watch out if he beats you again in a stakes race.
I don't know about that. Steve is a lot bigger man than I am.
Yeah, he is a big guy. Talking with John Ennis here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. All right, John, so let's go back to the beginning. You touched on a little bit of your upbringing with the Gaelic football side of things and your dad being a referee, but in terms of horse racing, take me back to the beginning. Where did this love begin for you?
I suppose when I was 15, 14, 15, I was always a smaller type of a lad growing up, and I had a big interest in horse racing. We'd go occasionally, maybe once or twice a month. My dad would go spectating at the horse racing, and I'd always go and I always found it fascinating and wanted to do it. So I wasn't big on school, as in I had no real interest in schooling and books and whatnot. So there was actually a jockey school in Ireland called Race, and I enrolled for that and went for my 2-week trial there and passed and got accepted for my 10-month course to become an apprentice jockey. So I done that and got, I think, my first ride on a racetrack back in Ireland maybe 6 months after coming out of the course. I was a 16-year-old kid. I was obviously small and really light, 90 pounds. And so, yeah, that's where it all started. And I rode in Ireland over jumps and on the flat. And basically all I've done for the last 20-odd years, 24 or 5 years, is the racing industry, mate.
Is there a difference, John, in the rush that you get when you win a race as a jockey as opposed to the rush that you get when you win a race as a trainer?
It's great to ride a winner as a jockey. It's fantastic. But you don't have the connection with the horse as such when you do as a trainer. Because I'm in the barn every morning, every evening, 7 days a week. I'm there every day. And you get a connection with the horse. You know his little idiosyncrasies. You know if there's something been bugging him for a while and you're trying to get him through it. And there's little things. And so to get a horse to win as a trainer, it's the rush you get is so much more than you do as a jockey, in my opinion. When you ride a winner as a jockey, it's fantastic. But you're on to the next one. You've got no time to dwell on it. But when you train a horse, you send them to races 5 and 6 hours before the race. You're preparing them weeks ahead. You're doing all the gate works. You're educating them in the best way you can. And when you actually go there and you get a horse to win, it's the best feeling ever. And it's I'm sure I'm saying this for all the trainers out there, that there's no other feeling, whether it's a $5,000 claimer or a maiden special rate or a stake at Churchill, you get the same kick out of it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I can imagine. I've said that many times, even being on the ownership side, that it doesn't matter what type of race your horse wins. It's just that thrill of watching your horse cross the finish line first. And if we could ever find a way to bottle that feeling as a sport, this would be the most popular sport in the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's so many downs in this game. When you actually go and win a race or be successful, it's not really about, like, as I said, the bigger races are fantastic. It's just to win that race, that one race, or with a horse that you've been working with for a long time and the owners maybe bred it or picked it out or whatever the case may be, they get such satisfaction from it. And that, from them saying congratulations to me or well done, it means so much. And I swear, it's the best thing in the world.
What did your parents think when you decided to enter the riding school and become a jockey?
They were big supporters of mine, and they didn't thought I was all talk. They didn't think I'd actually go through with it. but they were fantastic supporters of me the whole time. They said if you want to do something, you've got to do it 100% and give it your best shot. And if your best shot's not good enough, then that's it. But once you give 100% and you like doing what you're doing, we're going to be behind you. So that was great to have their support the whole way, you know.
What led you to eventually decide to become a trainer?
Well, I never really thought about becoming a trainer. It was something that just kind of happened. I kind of came over to America. I stopped riding kind of in England and Ireland, and I kind of came over to America just to see America and see what it was like. And I was just galloping here in the morning with Keenan and taking babies in the afternoons, which I love. A good friend of mine, Mr. Alan Redhouse, years ago, he had a horse that he didn't sell, or a horse he owned a part of himself. And he asked me, did I want to, you know, do the horse and train him, and we'll go into partnership with the horse. And from then on, I just loved what I did, and I was learning. I had no real experience back then, I'll be honest, but every day was a school day of learning something new and, like, different side of horse management. And we're very attentive to that in Ireland and England about doing stuff like that, but here not so much. You kind of go gallop boy or exercise rider. You just get on the horse, get off, and haven't got really much to do with it. But at home, you kind of learn all that. So when I had to come back and do it over here and get back into a way of doing it in America, it was fantastic. You know, it was fantastic to learn. And I just basically got to build the team to get that one horse, and you know, I wouldn't stop it for the world.
Yeah, I can imagine how that must have been for you back in the early days. John Ennis, my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. So you come to the United States. Talk about that decision and the day that you made the move.
Well, basically, as I said, I was coming over just for a 3 months experience, kind of not experience, but coming over just to see what it was like, see what I like it. I was just basically coming over here, galloping in the mornings, got offered a job doing farm work as well in the evenings, breaking the earlings and whatnot. And, you know, I love the whole lifestyle in America. It's all go here. And it was a great lifestyle for the first 3 months because I was finished at 2:30 every day. And it was no evenings or kind of weekend work right outside of the morning. But it was a great lifestyle. I was working hard in the mornings, but I had no real pressure, just getting on horses and riding horses. And to be honest with you, the first 3 months, I looked at what I wasn't sure I was going to come back. And I went home for a couple of months while I was applying for my visa. And then I was home for a couple of months, and I said, okay, that's where I want to be. I want to give it a go in America. And I got my 5-year visa and came on over.
Earlier, you mentioned the name Jerry O'Dwyer, and that's a name that people became familiar with last year as he was making his way along the road to the Kentucky Derby with Shotsky, who won the Remsen for him. I remember talking to him on this very same program. Tell me about that relationship. You two are still very close.
So Jerry and I, we met when we went to the racing school in Ireland as 15-year-olds. We weren't super close. We were acquaintances. We were like friends. We weren't like hanging out together in the racing school. We are different friends there. But then the last maybe 15, 16 years, when we both moved to England for a little bit, we became very close, and we're basically best friends now. He rode for jockeying in Ireland and England too for quite a time. He's a little bit more successful than I was now, to be fair. But great guy. Jerry's the best lad in the world you could meet. He'd be wanting for anybody. Great horseman. Knows what you're talking about. And it kind of works great for us because he's in Laurel up in Maryland, up that side of it, and I'm down here, and we do help each other out a lot with sending horses there or shipping down here. We work together a lot with horses here. So I say we're best friends for a long time. He was my best man at my wedding, and I was his best man at his wedding. So we've got a great relationship, and I don't think we've ever had a crossroad
Yeah, it's great. Those relationships are really special, especially here in the sport of thoroughbred racing. And it certainly helps, I would imagine, to have somebody like Jerry to bounce ideas off of, too.
Absolutely. And we do that constantly. Like, if I'm not sure about something, whether it's entering a race or whether it's boots in there or whether, you know, simple things about horses not doing good in the mornings, and I bounce ideas off him and he'll bounce them back off me. And we always find a way, or we always find a way to like help each other out, or say, you know what, if something's going bad, don't worry about it. It'll figure itself out. And it's a fantastic relationship. A fantastic relationship we've had, and we only need to continue.
John Ennis here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. If you were to describe your training philosophy and your approach to getting horses ready to go to the races, how would you do it, John?
I'm very far. I let a horse tell me when he's ready. I'm not hard on them. I try and educate them as best I can. I love training 2-year-olds, to be honest. I love getting yearlings and 2-year-olds ready for first-time races. But I don't force the issue with 2-year-olds or young horses. I let them tell me when they're ready. Precocious horses are precocious horses. You can't make a horse that's not really precocious, make him into a 2-year-old if he's not ready first, physically or more so mentally. So a horse mentally will tell you when he's ready to go and they're forward going, but once you listen to the horse, Mike, and it's basically the horses train themselves, kind of stay out of the way. And as I said, I don't force the issue with them. And 9 times out of 10, my horses will improve for a race. So
you know, I never take them on survival first for the first run at home, and whoever nice and easy, and whatever they do the first time, they're going to improve for the second start. So, yeah, no, I just basically listen to the horse and let them tell me when they're ready to start working, or let them tell me when they start raising reins. And I think it's the best way mentally and physically for a horse.
We started the interview talking about the big year that you're having, five of your wins coming here in 2020, and last year was pretty good too. What's been the key the last couple of years to really getting things going to a new level?
I think to be honest, Mike, with any trainer, it's getting the stock, getting a nicer individual in the barn. Obviously, I've got a great team at home in the barn. I've got great staff, they're very reliable. I ride out myself with another guy, and he knows how I like it done. You know, we go steady, and my staff are there, and the horses look fantastic. But it's stock. It's getting nicer stock and feeding them well, and you know, I think the last couple of years, especially this year, I've got a nicer team of young horses, and I've got nicer horses that I can compete here in Kentucky, and hopefully it keeps improving every year, you know.
What's the future hold for John Ennis? Where do you see this going? Where do you hope it goes?
Oh, look, Mike, I'd love to continue training race horses for a long, long time. But if I can just improve a little bit every year and learn every year on what I'm doing, that's all I can answer. I'm happy in what I do. I love my job. And once my owners and clients are happy, and my horses and staff are happy, and my stats are getting a little bit better every year, I'm happy. And as I said, I love my job. I wouldn't swap it for the world. So if I can just improve a little bit every year, I'd be delighted.
Yeah, it's amazing. You never stop learning in this game. And John Ennis really on a roll right now, and he's learning every day. And learning that he has a pretty good horse who will be entered into the phase at Tipton Horses of Racing Age Sales coming up next week. You want to make sure you check him out. County Final. We'll see if he sells or if they continue to race him maybe at Saratoga later this summer. John, listen, it's been a delight to hear your story and so much fun to catch up with you. And all the best moving forward, and keep it rolling.
Mike, thanks very much for having me on, and I'm sure we'll be talking down the line again.
All right, he's trainer John Ennis here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. If you missed any portion of the show, all you have to do is head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure. Coming up next, in case you missed it, a special encore of this interview with John Ennis. That's in the second half of Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Thanks for listening.
Well, Fasig's family, basically. Some of the guys that work here I've known for 30 years. I just felt really supported, and they're great communicators. They try to help in whatever you do.
Fasig Tipton's has a sale for every market, every segment in the industry. There's multiple opportunities where you're going to have plenty of good buying and selling situations.
Great customer service. I'm not only a buyer with them, but I'm a seller, and I've always been well taken care of.
There's a lot of different things that sometimes you need at a sale, and Fasig Tipton is there every step of the way.
They show year after year that they're ethical and they're fair, and they enjoy what they do. But when you're around people that have a combination of all those things, you know, you can't lose.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.